back in a short time. It will have to be the same kind of work which was done by the Palestinians during the last years by sending letters to editors, and they were all refused in the beginning. Then they got one published, then they got two published. Now they get almost everything published. We have to start to do it in the same way again, to start to build it from the beginning. And as to the communities, I think that one has to try to give the members of the community a sense of not despair. You shouldn't close down anything. That would be the worst thing to do, which is discussed today in communities. Can you go on with summer camps because of security reasons, terrorism and things like that? I think the worst thing would be to close down anything at all, because then our enemies would really have succeeded. And one has to find a way of motivating, of giving people the inner courage to stand up, to fight back, and not to lose, and not to say, this is it, and we give up.
Yes, I'd also like to comment on what you said, Tamar.
Of course.
Because,
that was the purpose.
I agree with you that most people do not read newspapers, and consequently, most people are influenced by the television. And I think we've all had experiences where we've been out to make a speech, and I found out that people were not interested in the speech but wanted to discuss what was on television the day before, the day after that. You asked that we should separate between TV, radio, and press, and between the different journalists. At least in Denmark, with the exception of very few newspapers, there was really no distinction to make regarding TV, radio, and newspapers. Of course, there were one or two newspapers which had decent journalists and which we reported it in a decent way. But in general, it was just a question of who could get the most sensational headline, who could lash at Israel mostly. I also see that the comparison which you said that we should compare Israel with Western countries rather than with other countries is false, because if we should compare it to Western countries, it should be the Western countries during a war, like during the Civil War. This is never done. People, and especially the press, treat Israel as if it is not involved in any kind of war, as if there's peace in it in Israel. I think also it's not a question of how the press is reporting. You made a point also that the press were making mistakes in their reporting, but that's not even the issue as far as I'm concerned. In my opinion, what is happening is that you always hear negative things about Israel, at least in Denmark, since the situation might be different elsewhere, but you very, very rarely hear anything positive from Israel.
Why?
That's a good question.
Why don't you ask yourself what happened? Why is it that the entire press is suddenly against it?
I can also explain that. It will take some more time.
Yeah, but we have time.
Yeah. And this also involves the question of inviting journalists to different countries. Now, what happened in Denmark is the fact is the thing that the journalist, as a man who looks into the background of a country and then goes and visits the country, does not exist anymore, with the exception of very few old journalists. What happens is you have a journalist who perhaps deals with sport and is told in the morning, now you have to go to Israel, to the West Bank, and you have to talk to this and this man about the poor Palestinians, and he does, and he comes back and says,
young person has to be in good condition.
Yeah, and he tells, and you can expect, you know, what kind of stories which he will bring. Now, this also is emphasized by the fact that whenever journalists are invited, for instance, to Libya, or to Saudi Arabia, or to Syria, they come home and they never make an article which criticizes this country. Why? Because if they do, they know that they will be hit on their professional basis. They know that the Arab world, at least that country, will be completely closed to them. Whereas in Israel, if Israel invites a journalist and even pays for the trip, they'll come back and they say, now I have to prove that I'm an independent journalist, and I'll do that by hitting at Israel. So Israel is really paying a very, very high price of being a democracy. And it's, as far as I can see, getting absolutely nothing out of inviting journalists to Israel. You mentioned Israel as an example.
They shouldn't do, maybe.
Well, maybe they should not invite anyone. We've had instances where they invite one of the most pro-Arab journalists. I don't know what they expect, whether they could change him, but he certainly didn't change. You mentioned that Israel was an example of the fact that the press should not have too much importance, because the press is what was very...
I just wanted to put things in proportion about the press, saying that we should not think of ourselves as being too important. Giving this as an example.
But Israel is a very bad example, because the people of Israel know the situation in Israel, whereas the people in Denmark does not know the situation in Israel, and are influenced to a much greater extent. I mean, when you talk to children who've just seen pictures on the television, you get the impression that everything they see go right into their brain. There's no filtering away of facts, no interpretation at all. And that's why I think that the press, and I agree with Stephen completely, the press has done tremendous damage to Israel and Jewish cause. Now, the question is, how can you change the situation? I think that there are two things which needs to be done. The first thing is to make the press report on Israeli affairs in a reasonable way. I don't want them to clap their hands whenever Begin says something. This, of course, is not what I want, but I want a fair treatment of Israel. And the second thing which seems equally important and perhaps easier to achieve is to have a reporting on what happens to the Arab countries, because the way things are now, with Israel being singled out, people get the impression Israel is the only group in the area, or you might even consider to say in the world. And this, of course, creates anti-Semitism. There can be no doubt about that.
Thanks. I just want to say that Tamar's speech was very stimulating, I realize. But please don't forget that we have a whole session tomorrow which will be devoted to the issue, and I think we should clean up our desks for the nations. Okay?
I believe it's good for what Tamar said about maybe thinking it over before speaking to journalists. And my opinion will be exactly a new sound in the midway between what our Scandinavian friends told and Tamar. Because I think it's a little hard for me to hear that the press is responsible for anti-Semitism or even for anti-Zionism. My point of view is reverse. I believe that the attitude of the press is only a symptom of the of what is going on. And why do we concentrate on press? Because only the press leaves traces. What people tell in the streets is not written, it's not broadcasted. So what we keep in mind is what's been written on paper, maybe even more important than what goes on television. What's written on a paper, even 10 years later, I can hold in my hand and show you. I would say that, first of all, a little point of precision is that the responsibility of Israel is not little in the matter of how press reacts. First of all, propaganda of the Israel embassy is very stupid, I should say. Secondly, I know from journalists of the Belgian televisions that the pictures from the televisions that have been shown during the Lebanon war came from Damascus. And why did they come from
Damascus?
Sorry. And why did they come from Damascus? Because at the moment the Israelis wouldn't let the television pictures go from Israel into Europe. So we don't have to wonder if these films who come from Damascus are not very objective. But I would say that the other side, that what Tamar did is in a way whitewash the press, is not quite right. Because as a militant anti-veganist, I was anyway very shocked by the attitude of the press, because it's the comparison between the press here and the press in Israel isn't right. Because the problem is not that they criticized Begin. I believe they didn't enough criticize Begin, but it's like been said before, the way they did it. And it's not only the press. The best example I can give of that is the declaration of Garcia Marquez. What did Garcia Marquez, who is the literature Nobel Prize, said? If the Nobel Prize of death would exist, I would give it to Begin and Sharon. To me, say that Begin and Sharon are murderers isn't so shocking, but that they are the biggest murderers of the world is a little bit, at least. And he was not the only man in the press who said such nonsense. And secondly, to precise my point of view, I would let's speak in my place, the editorialist of the biggest newspaper in Belgium, who wrote a few days, a few weeks ago, after the problem of the snow in Lebanon, in which the Syrians kept the help to come to rescue the people. He simply asked the question, what would we have said if the Israelis had done the same thing? Himself, he's not Jew, he's not Zionist or anything. He made a kind of a mea culpa and he asked, what would we have done? So if this journalist asked himself the question, I should say we could also ask ourselves the question. That's about the another little point I would say is the example how the Lebanon how the Lebanon war has been treated in Belgium, for instance. On the television, there has been twice been a big broadcast about Lebanon during 2 hours, one at the beginning of the war, one in August. And in both cases, they sent one crew in Lebanon and one crew in Israel. And the crew in Israel did the job right. They took a microphone, they asked questions, and they didn't, they weren't satisfied with the answers. They began to picking on the persons who answered and so on. That's what a journalist is supposed to do. On the contrary, the crew who went to Lebanon took a microphone, and it was just as if they would have said to the man of the PLO, here you have a mic, just say what you want to say. And that's too deux poids deux mesures, huh? I don't know the expression in English. But I think at the other side, it's indeed not very, it's not a good thing we should concentrate too much on this problem of the press, because the fact of concentrating the issue on the press would give in some way, the impression that begging is innocent. Because the poor man is so much attacked by the press that in a certain way it kind of serves him. In the Jewish public opinion, he slowly gets the image of someone who didn't do anything wrong. And I believe, contrary to what Abe said, we can do something about making the difference between begging and the Israel state. And not only to fight anti-Semitism, just because it's the ideal of some of our people. Just even if the whole world would not have spoken of the Lebanon question, I absolutely don't agree with this war, and it's not only a question of will people believe that I'm different from that. I am different from that, and I want to say it loudly.
The question was, can you do it and maintain Jewish support inside the country for Israel?
I believe I can, and I believe the best servants of the Jewish cause are the people of Sharm el-Sheikh, because it's the only people who provoked a kind of a reversal in the attitude of the press, for instance. People were very anti-Israel before the great meeting of Sharm el-Sheikh, and they began a little bit to change opinion after this manifestation. So I believe that men like Matti Pellet and so on are much better objective servants of Israel than Begin is. And second, the last point I would say is that to me, I already said one word about it this morning, practically one very dangerous issue is the issue about the last war. And there is something that is very dangerous to me, even much more dangerous than the anti-Zionism that develops actually. It's the fact that people begin each year a little bit more to forget what happened during the war, and that I believe some people say it's no use speaking more about what happened during the war, and I believe it's not true, because the Barbie case clearly shows people don't remember. And there has been on Belgian radio during 1 week broadcast about the Barbie case, and people could phone It's not a poll, but it's very interesting also. People could take their phone, and 1 hour during 1 hour, people could phone to the station and just tell what they wanted to tell. And about among 10 people, I believe 8 didn't speak at all about what happened to the Jews during the war. And that's maybe, I believe, the most dangerous thing, because it's kind of the last obstacle for anti-Semitism to develop really freely. It's what happened during the war. It's a real kind of break for anti-Semitism to develop freely.
I agree with your observation, Madam Chair, lady, that we seem to be preoccupied with the one issue of the press coverage of the Lebanese war, and while I recognize that Lebanon was a hallmark in terms of how people look at Jews, this is tomorrow. My understanding, this is tomorrow's discussion, and I'm not certain that thrashing it out today will be helpful tomorrow, because we're not coming in with a unified opinion. We're not coming in with a rehearsed position on this thing. But having said that, a few points. Number one.
Before I speak, I want to say a few words.
Yes. In America, there is an idiom which businessmen use, and it is, what is the bottom line? What is the end result of all of this activity? And I would simply point out what I pointed out this morning. Despite the fact that the television media was simply horrendous in its coverage of the, or let me put it this way, modify it a little, it could have been more objective. It did give, in the opinion of many unbiased observers, a distorted picture. And the fact is that the assumption is that most people get their news from television. Yes, they do. But I think you're minimizing the distinction between television and the influential journals. After all, television is a medium for the great unwashed masses, and I don't mean to be elitist. But the opinion molders, the movers, the shakers of society still read in America the New York Times, they read the Washington Post, they read the editorials, and it is these people that worry me, not the average factory worker who gets his opinion, but the man who belongs to Organization A, National Council of Churches, who gets his opinions formed from the daily editorial. He is the one who's in a position to do something significant. And the press, and I want to repeat that I made exhaustive studies of the editorials in the United States, and it is extremely difficult to come to any indictment of the American press in terms of the editorial, because you can take the New York Times, which ultimately supported the invasion, but was shocked and horrified about the siege of Beirut, the purported innocent victims, and so forth. And as I said, after the street demonstrations, there was such a reverberation of support for Israel, not only in the New York Times, the Citadel of American Jewry, but in the Dallas, Texas Times Herald. No. I'm trying to get the long-winded way of saying, what's the bottom line?
Yes, where is it?
The bottom line has been, as the Gallup poll showed, that support for Israel, in America at least, is just as great today as it was before Lebanon.
So the question is,
are we being unduly concerned? Was it a passing phenomenon? Is the attention span of most people not of long duration? But now, to raise the point that Abe raised, we had a very serious discussion in the men's room, I am absolutely astounded on the lack of discussion over an aspect of terrorism, because I had the feeling, and I do monitor the situation throughout the world to the best that I can possibly do, that there was an overriding concern in European communities over acts of terrorism directed against Jewish institutions. And I remember the press of the United States was replete with rhetorical questions, if you will, after Copernic and after the Munich bombing and a few other bombings, about the rise of international fascism, about the rise of a new black international.
In the American press.
And by the way, this, on top of the then released report about the increased incidence of anti-Semitism in the United States, the average American Jew
was scared.
He thought there was, in fact, a new
revival,
if you will, of a fascist international, coupled with the undeniable fact, that PLO supporters and left-wing terrorists and right-wing terrorists all received training in guerrilla warfare and in acts of terrorism, sometimes side by side at the Lumumba Institute in Moscow. And one began to get the impression that there is a tidal wave of terrorism about to be released against Jews. And in a sense, it's gratifying for me, because I couldn't convince an American audience without difficulty that there isn't a resurgence of fascism in Europe. And I come here listening from you trained observers, and as Abe says, there's hardly any mention of it. Thank you for reassuring me. I can go home and bring these.
But there's a difference here between two points that I think you should understand.
It's been spoken of in the press in Europe.
But I don't hear it here.
I want to comment also on the press. Maybe it's not the topic, but
let's be flexible.
I think in Holland there's no difference between the television and the written press, but I want to pinpoint that, of course, the written press is very important because the opinion leaders read the written press and they have no time to watch television every day. I can't follow the critics on the press. Anyhow, not concerning the situation in Holland. I mean, what was done in Lebanon by Israel wasn't very nice. More than 10,000 people died, a lot of wounded people, many civilians were wounded. And if people in the streets and also opinion leaders see the pictures, see the stories about it, whether there are some falsifications in it or not, they are shocked by it. And mothers are shocked seeing Lebanese mothers crying and seeing houses in flames. And you can't expect something else, I think. It was the first time that Israel fought, had a war in an inhabited area. And it was the first time, the first time that people realized how damaging such a war could be. It's wrong to say that the press made so many mistakes in reflecting this this terrible war, I think. The real problem I feel is not the way the press reflected the war in Lebanon, but the way the people who had already anti-Semitic feelings took the images, took the things which happened in Lebanon to become more anti-Semitic, to express themselves against the Jews, against existence of the state of Israel, against the sincere wishes of Israel to live in security. And one of the examples we mentioned before, that
such a situation happened also in Holland, but maybe not so much as in other countries, is the renewal of anti-Semitic statements by clergymen who saw the chance to start again propagating anti-Jewish feelings. But please, don't reverse the whole thing. Don't say the press is guilty. I think that we have to accept what happened, and we have to see how we can make our position better at the moment, and not by blaming the press.
Yes, let me take up Ronnie's statement. I mean, the media obviously became a focus of uneasiness. The question is, first, is whether they were right in distorting this, the reporting, and whether it's, even if they did it, whether it's wise, what you brought up, whether it's wise to fight one's allies, so to speak. And let me just give you a few examples, because I have other experiences from the Austrian scene. Sometimes I work for Profil, which is the equivalent for L'Espresso or Spiegel in the Austrian scenery. Let me explain what I think was the reason for this press coverage which we found. First, there was the high expectations towards Israel and to any other country in the Middle East. Israel always and still is pictured as the outpost of democracy, humanity, Western culture, and Israel still is. When there was 400,000 people rallying in Jerusalem during the war, it got very wide press coverage. It was very widely covered in TV. And it was a kind of release. People, finally, it's the only place in the whole Middle East where somebody can go to the street and demonstrate for Arafat. It's not in the Arab countries where there were no demonstrations in favor of Arafat. It was in Jerusalem. So this was. Oh, not in,
it was not in favor.
Not in favor of Arafat.
But kind of,
being Jewish and humanity.
Yes.
Yeah. Arafat pointed that himself, that the biggest demonstration
and
in favor
he pointed
of the Palestinians was in Israel,
right.
And not
yeah,
in America.
The same with the report of the Kahane Commission. Again, Israel was the only real democracy in the whole Middle East. Even Chancellor Kresge, who's not a friend of Israel, pointed out again and again, Israel is the democracy, it's the only democracy. So people are looking, searching for proofs for this, and there's obviously high expectations that Israel, which I find is good, and which makes it for another yardstick than, say, for as in relation to Iraq or to Syria or to Libya. I mean, you wouldn't expect very much, as most of the journalists do not expect very much from these countries. The other thing is things not very heavily reported on Israel. For example, the whole stories with weapon exports to the Khomeini regime, to the rebels in Nicaragua, in Honduras, to all of these dirty and dark stories were almost not covered. And I have been present in the discussions in the newspaper, and they said, well, let's not cover it, we do not know enough, and maybe it's not good for Israel. So you have counter examples as well. For example, the Red Cross help sent from the Austrian Red Cross to the Middle East had a lot of troubles with the Israeli administrations. They didn't cover this. The popularity gains Begin had in Israel, tremendous popularity gains during the first wars, during the first weeks of the war, were not at all reported. Because they said, well, you'd have the same phenomenon, the Thatcher phenomenon during the Falkland Island War. So this is common. You know, one shouldn't complain too much about how being treated by the press in an unobjective way if it's only because they expect more from you than less. I feel not so good about the 49% you reported in recent Gallup poll again in favor of Israel. I wouldn't take this as a proof that everything is as before. Many people, many Jews, young Jews say, Israel will never be the same for me again. And this attitude is very strongly a myth is broken, so to speak, and this broken myth of Israel as the outpost of democracy, of humanism, behaving differently like all the other states does not hold any longer. And this kind of...
Jews or generals?
Jews in general, and that's the point. And as long, and I would, you know, maybe now they again favor Israel over the Arab states in the conflict, but it's not the unconditional and positively emotional relationship which there was before. And it has to do with facts and not just with an ugly press reporting, because otherwise it wouldn't have had this impact on young Jews as it had. So obviously it cannot be only the press who were responsible for this, but it has to do with what happened there and discarding this and always saying yes but I'm, you know, I do not want not begging to be criticized, but it doesn't help. It doesn't help to focus all the criticism on the media while at the same time seeing that the Western public opinion more and more dissociates from the national consensus in Israel regarding almost all the issues in the Middle East conflict. And this, after a while, must cause strains as they showed up in the Lebanon war. But this will go on. I mean, I told it to colleague.
Yeah.
Sami Smuha's findings. I mean, what he found is that the most, what we consider to be radicals within the Israeli specter, the Shelley party and the Rakach party, represent what this, the mainstream, even conservative mainstream, in the Western world. If it's only the fringe in Israel which represents the mainstream, in the West, there must be some. As long as these two strings are not brought together substantially, there will be this, a stronger strain in the future than it was before. And the Lebanon will not be the last chapter in this.
You wanted to find them for just one moment? I mean, you just labeled them, but you didn't define them as you did at lunch. The two streams.
He made a very interesting list. He said that the kind of escalator.
Who is he?
Smuha. 11 conditions from total rejectionism to the Tehiyah Gush Emunim position. And he ranked the Israeli public opinion and the world public opinion on this scale. And what he found is that, you know, the left fringe, so to speak, within Israel is the mainstream in almost all the Western countries. So
it's not very clear what you...
No.
I don't see how Rakach is...
No, it's a question of...
Well, to acknowledge the Palestinians,
right,
as a people, to deal with the PLO as a representative, to draw back from the occupied territories. Mm-hmm. All their demands represent something which in Israel only is represented by Rakach or by... So this means something.
A little more than Rakach and Shelley, I believe, a big part of the Shalom Achshav movement. It's a little simplified. It's not very objective. Because all the good part of the Shalom Achshav, the Ein Gvul movement, and so on.
Yeah.
It's
just,
not,
but
not
it's still minority movement.
Not
okay,
but not
what
he listed
was opposition to annexation of occupied territories. Opposition to settlements in Judea and Samaria, favoring territorial concessions in the West Bank, favoring withdrawal to pre-1970 borders within certain modifications, recognizing the Palestinians as a nation, recognizing the PLO as a Palestinian representative, and so on, favoring a Palestinian state alongside Israel. This is a scale, and if you rank world public opinion and Israeli general mood and general national consensus, it falls apart more and more, and he traced it from 67 up to 82, and he showed that every single year this split becomes larger and the international public opinion becomes more and more unfavorable towards Israel, which is self-evident if you look at this at this divergence.
No, well, I have
okay.
Gert and then he.
I had also some comments on what you said. What you said also has to do with the press. Not because I want to talk about the press, but because in my opinion, the press is really the most important issue. I don't think that there are very many other issues that has such an important impact on people's opinion as the press. And the first thing I want to mention, you mentioned peace now. This is not a discussion whether political or not, political for against peace now. But I do think that the peace now movement, although many people in the peace now, when they really do what they do because they want something good for Israel, also helps to create very bad images among people. I know this is not what the peace now movement want. When you see them standing and demonstrating in front of the Israeli embassy in Denmark with a sign, Baby Fascist, Shalom Fascist, or something like that, which has happened. And
don't do it here.
Well, okay, no. they're in Denmark. And this report was immediately
reported. I'm sorry, I'm as chairman, I interrupt because the Shalom Achshav people book and even were involved now, and we had a long talk. And they said precisely this, that there should be a greater consultation between the Shalom Achshav friendship groups and themselves, so that, for instance, they were not in favor of demonstrations in front of embassies. So this was established that from now on there should be a tighter consultation between the friendship groups and Shalom Achshav. Because they say, of course, we know that these people have to do what is good for them in their own countries, but somehow we have to coordinate policies. So this is something which has to be clarified. I'm sorry. I wasn't that chairman.
Yeah. I agree with you on this point. This is what we also like to have in Denmark, but nevertheless see these things and they really make an impact on the people. If they see our Bible television saying one thing and they see Jews either in Israel or in Denmark or wherever confirming these things, when people believe that our Bible is right, they don't, at least not very many people do, consider this a sign of Israeli democracy. Now, you said the second thing was about the war.
Maybe our post has sometimes.
I don't think we can be penalized by the second thing.
The second thing was. You must wait 2 hours for someone to say that. I believe it's important.
Yeah.
That someone says that in the Lebanon War, Arafat was more near to being right than Begin.
The second thing was the fact that you said that people were shocked by the war and you could not expect anything else. I agree with you on that point. But the problem is you only hear about the war in Lebanon. You do not hear about the war in the Polisario and the Morocco and the Iraq, Iran in the same way. And this really has been important.
I have a couple of questions. Here. Take the next to last point that was made, the Smukha world opinion, the Israeli opinion. Actually, as I pointed out, is it true? Such calls as we have don't seem to show, certainly not in the United States. And I'm not sure in other countries either. And as I mentioned before, we have had virtually no discussion here of polls with regard to popular attitude inside toward anti-Semitism, etc., etc. And those polls we've had with regard to Israel show some recovery, perhaps even as in the United States, perhaps you will find the same thing in your own countries now that Sabra and Shatila are over, and you will find perhaps some kind of reversal. It will be interesting because none of you others seem to have taken a poll in most recent months with regard to it. You might even find that Lebanon was a watershed the other way. You might find that there is some kind of a... I pose it as a possibility. I wouldn't exclude it. I don't say it's going to happen, but look out for it as one kind of chance. But what I'm saying here is that I don't see that kind of evidence around this table for the Smukha theory that, as it was advanced here. That's the first thing. But what it points out is we really have to perhaps study our opinion, our public opinion, in different ways than we have been doing now. So this is one kind of conclusion one might draw, perhaps, as to how we ought to be doing on a more organized basis. The second thing mentioned was made of students. Now, I remember when a student couldn't get up in a French university to take a poetry position, ever. He would be thrown out not only the law faculty, but almost anywhere. It was almost impossible some years for a pro-Israel student to get up in a French university. This is not the case any longer. So here we have an improvement. In Great Britain, I'm curious. I also have the impression, despite the difficulties you face, the pro-Arab professionals almost that you have there, it still, I would say, is probably better, my guess is, than it was a few years ago. I would like your opinion with regard to that score or with regard to universities elsewhere. In other words, there has been something of a comeback of the Jews in being able to express their views in universities, which was not the case some years ago. It was almost impossible some years ago. So here again, there is perhaps, maybe it's getting worse again, I don't know. But the last few years saw some kind of a regain in Jewish strength, in Jewish expression, in Jewish possibilities. So I'd be curious again to hear with regard to that kind of what's happening with regard to it. I was terrified by the youth training centers, the one mention that is made. Okay. I don't know if this is happening in other countries. Because if this is happening in other countries, and I think we all look out for it, then we're in real trouble. Because this combines the economic need of the immigrant or the lumpen proletariat or what you will with a, gives them a material gain and the ideology at the same time. And if this...
I didn't understand quite well, the training centers again...
They're giving people training in carpentry or jobs, like orcs, and at the same time they're giving them ideology. Now if this is happening anywhere else, I think this is something very important. We have some. This is something very important to watch out for. So I certainly would like to immediately draw attention to it if it happens anywhere else. Let me now come for a moment to the press. I dealt with it briefly in the time of the budget. And maybe tomorrow's discussion as well. Now, everybody knows Jews have a paranoia about this. But sometimes, as Dr. Kissinger said, with regard to another situation, a little paranoia is justified. And I would contend tomorrow that the underlying ground, the parameters in which the press discusses, did move to a certain extent. I also agree with you 100% that we should not berate the press, that in certain respects it's more of a symptom than it is. And it's a terrible self-defeating tactic anyway. As a tactic, whatever you may think, it's a terribly self-defeating tactic to berate the press as a press. So I certainly wouldn't want to see that happen tomorrow in that sense. But that there was some shifting of the parameters of discussion about Israel among the press over and above the legitimacy of that, I would say it did occur. And how one expresses that is difficult, but I think it can be done. Now, perhaps it can be done in terms of what was pointed out from the Italian scene, and perhaps this also leads us to another possible technique that we would have to consider in dealing with for the future. And was worked in other areas. Here was the press, after a horrible event, the bombing of the Rome synagogue, said, maybe you have some responsibility. In other words, there was some self-examination. In a few other places, examination was forced upon the press by the screaming and the criticism of the Jewish community, but generally it didn't become self-examination, it became self-defense. I think we have to avoid creating a self-defense syndrome rather than a self-examination syndrome. This is an important matter of tactics and strategy. And whether we can get the press to self-examine, I don't know. We finally made some progress with textbooks, Catholic textbooks, and prejudice and textbooks, when we got the people themselves to examine. It may be that even the 68 generation is ready now, after the organism dies down, we could start doing some quiet discussion with even those people who are TV in the Scandinavian countries and other places and so forth. Not again in terms of attack, but in terms of, all right, let's look at it. How good were you as a professional, as a journalist, in doing this kind of a job? It's a possibility, I don't know whether, but it seems to be one alternative method that we might be able to use. The other aspect of it is in many ways a more difficult aspect than we're trying that too. To help Israel and its PR. Now the great difficulty here is that it is the basic position that is taken by the government leaders that becomes the natural thing that is mentioned or criticized or discussed and so forth and so on. But even with the limit, within the limits of what they could have done, let us say, recognizing that the Arafat and the others were making press available, they did a fairly lousy job in those terms. As one of our studies showed, we can make that available to you. In other words, we interviewed a number of journalists who worked in the field, and the Israelis did not do a very effective job from that point of view. Contrary-wise, I think we also have a responsibility that some people pointed out. And I don't know if it's true, perhaps we can find out from people who cover it.
you had a situation where, though the PLO is presumably open, the comment, there was one piece in commentary recently which argued that what the PLO had done was over the years kill off, drive out, attack physically those journalists who reported unfavorably on the spot or made their life so difficult that they did not dare to report as fully as they should have done. Now it's a question, and a legitimate question to the agency and so on, whether, even though it's a post question at the moment, as to whether it actually was so. Because there again is a parameter where one is entitled to ask the agencies whether or not they didn't dare send in correspondents who were afraid or not. So I would say that with the passage of time, we can actually come now to a more reasoned discussion with the press, and I hope that's what we have tomorrow, knowing this table, I would expect we would. But at the same time, trying to raise in the press's own minds some doubts about whether or not it did its own professional job in the way it should have. I think that's about the best we could possibly do in this kind of a situation tomorrow. But if we come back to the other subjects, what I would like to hear something about is what is popular opinion today with regard to Jews, not with regard to Israel. About this, I have heard almost because one last word, I'm sorry. Every poll we've had since the end of the war, everyone, in France particularly, has shown a decline in anti-Jewish theory. If I go back from 49, the first ones we had, to today, anti-Jewish stereotypes have gone down regularly, consistently. When you let your brother marry a Jew, your sister marry a Jew, etc., etc. In fact, we have a situation to take. In the marriage, society is accepting Jews so much that the problem is keeping Jewish communities together.
Mm-hmm. It's not so sure.
That's the question I'm raising.
Self-examination of the press. I would like to ask a question to all my colleagues here about the frailty of self-examination. What have been the reactions of the press to these recent incidents against the members of the multilateral force, multinational force? Because in Italy, also legitimate newspapers have been heavily hinting about the Israelis masterminding this. Mm-hmm. So this shows you the frailty of self-examination.
Not very much.
Like, have you seen the Repubblica? This has been popping up.
But that was before the multinational. The Dutch can tell you that it started with the United Nations force. I mean, it started a long time ago. People who came from Holland and Ireland, at one point the Israeli government even considered asking them to withdraw the Dutch because it felt that it has a very bad effect because they all became pro-Palestinian. In other words, we must ask ourselves, why did it happen?
You have it even longer with the also observers, the Swedish also observers.
The Swedes are the same story.
Yeah.
I think that we have to be here for more
of Americans.
These are our training centers. No, I wanted to mention because young people, soldiers, they join without jobs and they become anti-Israeli.
When they go to the United Nations?
Yes, uniform.
We got trouble.
Hey, has it ever been different in the history of recorded history?
Yeah, but for a few years we thought we were living on Egypt. When? 5, 6 years, 7 years ago.
Jews and so on. As far as I know, there were no talks in the last few years in France on this subject. But what I feel is that the Jewish community, in its specificity, is quite well accepted. That's to say, all the things that were said in the last few years on the right to difference and so on applied on the Jewish community too. And I feel it's quite. Quite a knowledge that the Jewish community is a specific anti-Jewian, but it has a very specific interest in the problem, in problems. Where the question is not so clear is on the way and the people feel about Jews, as you say, as a religion, and so on. I don't believe that Judaism is well known. As you said, it still appears as a very unknown, mysterious, some kind of a Frank Masonry of people helping each other and so on, and people that are very well representative in a few professions. So the Jew is accepted as a Jew, but they don't know what is a Jew. And what it implies.
She is a complex. She's a fifth English, but we don't put it down. So I must just would like to say something about this problem of the mystery around Judaism. An interesting thing in Italy today, I'm sorry, I'm not the Italian chairman, but this is something I come from the center of Catholicism. I think it's worth saying this. Anti-Zionism is widespread, but Judaism is fashionable, particularly in Catholic circles. It's being so fashionable that we have trouble buying a supply of matzot before Pesach, because it's so fashionable to be interested in Judaism that unless we go in the Jewish quarter and get our matzot and our Pesach Passover wine in time, the converts will be buying up all of it. Because the big fashion, the big fashion is
always,
the big fashion is to have a whole few there who will be sitting with them, and converts are both of friars and nuns, are holding Passover sederim. It's the big fashion is to be Jewish now. Jewish is beautiful, and this is too at the heart of Catholicism.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, and not even so mysterious, because they really act out that, well, I think there is something in the background of this, because under the present hope, there is a trend towards the recuperation of Judaism as a pre-Christian value. In a certain sense, there is a de-Judaization of Judaism, and a kind of phagocytation of it. I think this is behind it. It's not just love of Judaism, but there is a phagocytation of Judaism on the side of...
What does that mean for us non-biologists?
It means that they want to
absorption.
Possess. No, it's more than absorption. It's really to introject, to digest Judaism and make it a part of their own patrimony by calling Judaism pre-Christianity, a pre-Christian value.
One question. How many? Because somebody mentioned it earlier and it dropped out. I'm sorry, it's a little bit irrelevant, but I'll ask it anyway. What do people think is the number of Jews in Italy? And if each one of you tell us around the table, because somebody used it as an index of anti-Semitism, I'm not quite sure that's true.
In Italy, it's about between 500,000 and 5 million. And we are 35,000. Between 500,000 and 5 million.
What Haggadah do they use? Which Haggadah do they use?
The one they come to buy at the Union of Jewish Communities.
I don't know
how smart they get.
And I was very worried.
They've been buying up the wine, the Haggadot, and so on.
I'm puzzled. If we operate on the assumption to be anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, is ipso facto to be anti-Semitic.
I'd like to go the opposite.
Well, there's a widespread inclination wherever I go to treat attacks on Israel and attacks on Zionism. The literature is filled with it now as being identical with attacks on Jews. This is, one can read symposia after symposia where a Yehuda Bauer or some other distinguished interpreters of the American scene the international scene make that equation. I'm puzzled about what happens in Italy to the anti-Zionists but to love Jews. How does that happen?
No, it's what I was trying to say. We are trying to detect the signals, but what are the real signals behind us? This is an operation which is underway. So I think it's either they're trying to nullify the Judaism. Right. After all, it's such a small community in Italy. Either they nullify Judaism and they absorb the qualities, values, and connotations, or they want to establish, we don't know, we are waiting to see, these signals are 2 years old maybe, and we are trying to detect them, we can only capture them now, then we will try to interpret. Sure.
To come back on your questions, first the position of the Jews on whether there is a growing prejudice against the Jews or not. I can't judge it very well. I only know that after the Second World War, Jews were accepted everywhere for a lot of mixed marriages. And Jews were not singled out because of their Jewishness. But today, there is a lot more attention to Jewish affairs, Jewish thought, Jewish writers, and Jewish artists. And everywhere it is specified that they are Jews and that they have a Jewish background. And I am afraid that the more it is specified, the more there is attention and the more there is a certain kind of feeling that it is an element in the Dutch society. You had a second question about the training center. I just spoke about it before the coffee break. We haven't any training centers like England, but we have the UNIFIL. United Nations operation, where young Dutch men, soldiers, can go where they get a reasonable salary. Otherwise, and they like to go there because they can earn money. otherwise, they will be certainly unemployed. Once being there, they become from neutral to mostly to anti-Israel. And there are several explanations for that. One of the explanations is that the environment in Lebanon is so bad, people are claiming that it is the guilt of Israel, that they live in poor conditions, and then they come to Israel for their holidays and they see a rich society which is wealthy and so on. So they tend to give the responsibility more to Israel than to the underdogs in Lebanon. And which has to be mentioned, second part of your question, there is in Holland, like in other countries, of course, a Palestine committee, which try to send young people on a regular basis to Lebanon, to Palestinian camps, to let them work in medical fields. And when they came back, they were very much anti-Israeli. Now, that has stopped because of the Israeli invasion. And the people who were there during the Israeli invasion, they brought the worst stories we can ever imagine. That's mine.
Now,
could we go around the table now? Because I think we're supposed to have the sort of suggestions, I believe.
Yeah, but
a
lot of you have spoken more than
no, well, start there and then.
No, Eisenberg had asked.
Sorry. No, because I thought you were going.
And then shall we do this? Would you rather speak? Vous préférez parler après que vous avez entendu les autres?
Oui, ça fait rien.
Non, c'est comme vous préférez.
Mais je voulais commencer dans les suggestions, c'est pour ça.
Alors, c'est un peu.
D'accord.
How many Jews do people think there are in Holland?
Certainly more than 30,000. And they're always amazed when you say 30,000. But they don't think a half million.
Maybe everywhere, except in France, where there are many Jews indeed. I would like only to make one point. It's maybe a little out of the subject, but there's been a lot spoken about Catholics. A little bit. There's been quite some things said about that, and I believe that indeed Catholicism has a very important role in the origin of anti-Semitism, and we shouldn't.